There are many reasons why the Nazi cruelties are probably the best-known atrocities of a country against its own people, at least in the Western world. But to me, one stark difference between what happened in Germany and other inhumane regimes of the first half of the 20th century, such as the Ottoman Empire and the Soviets, is that prior to Hitler's rise to power, Germany didn't really have a recent history of brutality against its own people. Paradoxically, at the time Nazism arose, Germany was among the most highly cultured, educated, and some would even argue enlightened societies of the time. But the Third Reich stood in stark contrast to that. In part, it's due to the sophistication of German society at the time, in areas like medicine, science, and technology, that we have a strong record of forensic evidence for the evils that happened under Nazi rule. Now, any crime is essentially a piece of history that must be understood by uncovering and interpreting forensic evidence. That evidence might come in the form of testimony, perhaps from perpetrators, witnesses, or survivors of an experience, like the Nazi death camps. If investigators are fortunate, there may also be physical evidence to analyze, like the photographs or specimens from medical experiments conducted at concentration camps. Physical evidence is particularly important since we know that perpetrators often lie about criminal activity, and eyewitness memories are not always reliable. The Third Reich kept near meticulous records of most of their actions, and so left behind a legacy of their reign of terror. In this lecture, we'll discuss some of the forensic evidence against the Nazis and how it was used at trial. I'm going to focus on one of the concentration camps in particular, called Buchenwald, and discuss some of the medical experimentation and other Nazi practices that took place there, some of which were allegedly and surprisingly under the direction of a woman. Buchenwald was opened in 1937, and when you count its satellite labor sites, was the largest of all the concentration camps on German soil. Over the period of its operations, the site was used to house 240,000 people the Germans considered undesirable. Their criteria included mental or physical disability, sexual orientation, or religious differences. Jews, of course, but other groups as well. The camp also housed political detainees, including as many as 350 Allied prisoners of war. Although not a specific Nazi death camp, the Buchenwald accounting indicates that 33,462 prisoners died there. But there were an additional 8,483 Russian POWs who were executed upon arrival at Buchenwald, and so not included in that count, as they weren't considered yet housed at the camp. Another about 13,500 emaciated people died during the death march to evacuate prisoners as the Allies closed in on Buchenwald. When you add up all who died at or upon leaving Buchenwald, the toll rises to over 56,500 people, and it wasn't even considered one of the Nazi extermination camps. I tell you those numbers particularly so you can see the careful accounting that took place, but also the extent of the killing at what was alleged to be a work camp. The majority of the deaths at Buchenwald were not random or unanticipated events. Some prisoners were out and out murdered, either by shooting in the stables or hanging in the camp crematorium, but most died from starvation or were simply worked to death. Some of those deemed too weak for labor were transferred to extermination camps. Buchenwald was a training site for the Schutzstaffel, or so-called SS members, so they could learn the incarceration, torture, and prisoner work detail methods of the Third Reich. It was also one of the places that conducted Nazi medical trials and other terrible experiments on prisoners, after which most died or were killed. Life expectancy at Buchenwald was estimated at just 3 months. Human experimentation that occurred at the hands of the Nazis was known not only from their meticulous records and countless photographs, but also preserved human specimens, some of which are still curated today at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. In some studies conducted at various camps, they removed portions of prisoners' nerves, muscles, and bones to examine tissue regeneration. The tissues taken were sometimes surgically implanted into other inmates to study transplantation. Healthy people were infected with hepatitis and malaria or dosed with mustard gas. People were subjected to extreme cold, such as 3 hours in a tank of ice water. Prisoners were put into compression chambers and subjected to low oxygen levels to simulate altitudes up to nearly 70,000 feet. Men were forced to eat nothing and drink only seawater, some of which was chemically processed to try to desalinate it. All manner of wounds were created, including head injuries, and then fragments of glass, wood shavings, and bacteria rubbed into them to test a variety of antibiotics and other treatments. It makes me sick to speak of it. The primary intent of those experiments was to look for ways the German Army, Navy, and Air Force could counter frostbite, altitude sickness, and common wartime injuries and infections. But there were other studies too, such as the use of x-rays, surgery, and drugs to sterilize people so the Nazis could limit the reproduction of those they thought inferior. The infamous Dr. Josef Mengele at the Auschwitz death camp specifically experimented on children, especially twins, and the handicapped. There was no consent on the part of any of the victims of these experiments. Many historic photographs show what appear to be doctors and nurses either experimenting on or, quote, caring for all types of experimental subjects. How any of those people could rationalize calling themselves scientists or medical professionals is beyond me. With specific regard to Buchenwald, three particular areas of experimentation were assigned to their laboratories: poisons, chemical burns, and vaccines for typhus. These were of interest to the Third Reich due to their usefulness in either murder or warfare-related injuries. The fourth area of research involved both surgical and hormonal experiments to try and, quote, cure what they considered deviant sexual orientation. That's the reason Buchenwald housed homosexuals. In the poison studies, Buchenwald camp prisoners were given various toxic substances in their food. Following that, they would either die and be autopsied or be killed for an autopsy, so the mechanisms of the toxin could be looked at. In addition, some inmates were shot with poison bullets in a non-lethal place on their body to see if that could be an effective means of administering toxins at long range. That way, if a Nazi gunshot didn't kill the enemy in battle, the poison bullet would. Non-anesthetized Buchenwald prisoners were also deliberately burned with phosphorus-containing compounds, the type used in a variety of incendiary bombs used to set fire to buildings and other targets during warfare. The purpose was to research different kinds of medical treatments, such as salves and ointments the Buchenwald scientists were developing. The third major area of experimentation at Buchenwald involved typhus, which is a relative of spotted fever. Rather than use petri dishes to culture the microbes, healthy prisoners were infected with typhus to create a living reservoir of bacteria for study. More than 90% of those inmates died. Researchers used another population of prisoners for the actual typhus experiments, administering several types of potential vaccines before infecting the subjects with typhus several weeks later. Another group served as a scientific control, receiving no vaccine, only the infection. In 1946, the famous post-war Nuremberg trials held a specific set of hearings about Nazi medical experimentation, known as the doctor's trials. Witness testimony, scientific journals, medical records, pathology specimens, and photographs were all used to forensically document the cruel experiments on the prisoners at Buchenwald. And elsewhere. Some of those involved were acquitted, others were sentenced to prison terms, and some were put to death. Although medical experimentation on humans certainly happened before that time and has continued since, the studies conducted by the Nazis were so atrocious they ultimately changed research directives for the entire civilized world. Specific decisions made at Nuremberg helped refine and codify ethics for the use of human subjects in research, like regarding consent, degree of risk to participants, and the right of a person to withdraw from a study at any time. Now, let's return to Buchenwald and discuss other crimes that took place there, particularly under the direction of one of the camp commandants, Karl Otto Koch, and his notoriously brutal wife, Ilse, who became known as the Witch of Buchenwald. This pair was apparently so terrible that their own Nazi superiors had them arrested in 1943. It was alleged they used the camp's prisoners for their own private gain, murdered those prisoners to keep them from talking, and embezzled from the Third Reich. In line with their precision, the Nazis definitely had rules about how a camp should be run and who was to be killed, and they believed the commandant and his wife were corrupt and insubordinate. Here's one reason Herr Koch was arrested. His superiors discovered he had several of the medical personnel at Buchenwald shot and then listed them on the death record as political prisoners. It was later discovered the executed men had treated Koch for syphilis, and he didn't want word of his illness getting out. He may have contracted the infection from the camp brothel where female prisoners were forced to work as prostitutes, or perhaps from his wife, who was alleged to be pretty promiscuous. But some contend he caught the disease from another man. That would have been most scandalous for the commandant, since homosexuals were one group singled out for incarceration at Buchenwald. A report commissioned by the U.S. Army after the war names Koch a homosexual and his wife a nymphomaniac. Anyway, Karl Koch was tried in an SS court, found guilty, and executed by a Nazi firing squad in 1945 at age 47. The prior year, his wife had been acquitted on all charges of corruption due to lack of evidence. Following that, the 38-year-old Ilse Koch went to live with family away from Buchenwald. But that's definitely not the end of her story or her legal troubles. Why was the Witch of Buchenwald so hated, feared, and reviled? We need to go a bit further back in time to answer that. Karl Koch became commandant of Buchenwald in 1937 with his wife Ilse at his side. But a couple of years before their 1943 arrests by the Gestapo, Karl had been transferred to occupied Poland to help develop and staff a new Nazi camp. In his absence, his wife Ilse gained prominence at Buchenwald, and some sources say she even filled a supervisory role. It was during this time she's alleged to have become both predatory on prisoners and promiscuous with other camp leaders, including high-ranking SS officers and even the medical staff. There's been suspicion that Frau Koch engaged in sexual relationships with inmates. Ilse Koch was particularly sadistic and especially enjoyed watching all manner of punishment doled out to inmates, while other SS wives would avert their eyes. She's alleged to have engaged in her own random acts of violence, including riding around on horseback and lashing out at prisoners at whim. Ilse teased the prisoners and guards with her sexuality, including wearing clothing that would be considered provocative in that day. And if a man looked at her, it said she would have him punished. It's alleged she would watch the men strip naked upon their arrival at camp and make lewd comments about the prisoners' bodies to the other SS wives. All the while, Ilse Koch had a lovely home at Buchenwald and bore three children there, though one died in infancy. She enjoyed fine clothes and many luxuries while thousands starved just a short walk away. Although the couple was paid well as Nazi elite, other SS members began to resent the Koch's excesses and wondered how they were affording them. It was later discovered, and this was part of the reason they were arrested by the Gestapo in 1943, that the Kochs were having personal property, even gold teeth taken from the prisoners. They were putting the funds into Swiss bank accounts. Ilse Koch was particularly friendly with one of the Buchenwald physicians. He was preparing a dissertation on tattoos as indicators of criminal behavior. Even today in the forensic ID of unknown persons, we recognize tattoos can be marks of cultural affiliation, like gang membership, sexual identity, or religion. Anyway, it was said that Koch herself came up with the idea of having the tattoo study done at the camp based on watching men work with their shirts off as she rode around Buchenwald on horseback. About 40 inmates with tattoos, particularly interesting ones, wound up at the infirmary and never returned. After that, pieces of tattooed skin were found in the Buchenwald pathology lab. It was alleged the skin was used to make lampshades, book covers, knife sheaths, and even handbags. and that fellow prisoners were forced to manufacture those artifacts. It was also said the Nazi pathologist at Buchenwald tried his hand at making shrunken heads from prisoners like he'd seen done in other cultures. Some of these objects were given to SS members as gifts, while others the Witch of Buchenwald kept for herself. So notorious was Elsa Koch that long after she was arrested in 1943 and imprisoned pending her SS trial, she was still legendary at Buchenwald. On April 4, 1945, the first Nazi site liberated by U.S. forces was one of the Buchenwald work camps. This caused the Nazis at the main Buchenwald facility to begin the prisoner evacuation march I mentioned earlier, which killed over 10,000 people. A week later, some of the remaining prisoners, who found out by clandestine radio communications that Allied liberators were on the way, well, they rushed the towers and killed the guards using guns they had been stealing and stashing for years. Later that afternoon, the U.S. Army arrived, and soon the 21,000 camp survivors received food, water, and medical attention. The liberators were shocked by the appearance of the inmates. One 85-pound French POW said he once weighed 170. A stable that was intended for 80 horses housed 1,200 men. Stacks of corpses lay by the crematorium. It was all captured on film. The next day, journalist Edward R. Murrow visited Buchenwald to report its horrors to the world. He was shown a group of children, some as young as six, who an adult inmate introduced with a sarcastic, "Here are our children, the enemies of the state." Murrow saw the stacks of bodies. He saw them and tried to count at least some of the dead. There were more than 500 in two piles that he tried to inventory, after which he gave up counting. One line in his radio broadcast, which I've listened to several times, is, quote, "If I've offended you by this rather mild account of Buchenwald, I am not in the least sorry." General Patton ordered the U.S. Army to force local German citizens to witness the Nazi atrocities that had been going on nearby. They made both men and women exhume victims from mass graves, where the signs of torture and violent death were clearly evident. It's said the locals had already once dug up some of the original Nazi grave sites and then reburied some of the dead further from town because they couldn't stand the stench of death. 1,200 local civilians were made to march to Buchenwald and parade past piles of dead bodies. They were also forced to pass a table that held alleged human artifacts, including two shrunken heads, a lampshade said to be made of human skin, framed and unframed pieces of tattooed skin, and jars of human organs recovered from the camp's pathology lab. All this was captured on film that I've seen. The smiling faces of the German people on their way to the camp are a stark contrast to the looks on their faces once they got there. Among many stories the Allies heard from the survivors at Buchenwald were accounts of Elsa Koch's legendary brutality and sadism. So after the war ended, she was one of the first Nazis rounded up and among the first to be tried by the U.S. military. These were not the famous Nuremberg trials, but rather a military court-martial involving 31 Nazis from the Buchenwald camp, including Elsa Koch. The proceedings began on the first day of April in 1947 at the Dachau concentration camp. 10 days later, on the anniversary of the Buchenwald liberation, despite her claims that none of the accusations were true, a panel of 8 American military judges found the Witch of Buchenwald guilty of, quote, "violation of the laws and customs of war," and sentenced her to life in prison. One exceptionally scandalous thing about the trial was that 41-year-old Koch was 8 months pregnant as she took the stand in 1947, despite having been in American custody at Dachau for several years awaiting trial. The father of her child had to be either a fellow inmate, one of her American jailers, or one of the members of the military tribunal helping prepare the case. To this day, no one knows. After the trial, a review process was demanded, and within a year, all 31 of the Buchenwald convictions were either overturned or at least had their sentences reduced. The final conclusion of the review commission regarding Koch was that she had been a victim of, quote, "propaganda and mass suggestion." So in 1948, the American military governor and administrator of occupied Germany, General Lucius Clay, commuted Koch's sentence to 4 years, essentially time served since her arrest. This caused international outrage. Some even alleged Clay had to be the father of her child based on his clemency. Later in his biography, Clay claimed he took more abuse over his leniency on Elsa Koch than anything else he did in Germany. During the review process leading to Clay's decision, Koch's American defense attorney criticized the prosecution based on the lack of any forensic evidence solidly connected to her, especially around the accusations that ornamental goods had been made of human skin at Frau Koch's request. No lampshade had been produced at trial, despite its presence in many photographs taken during the Buchenwald liberation. American authorities admitted it had somehow gone missing. I've seen a forensic pathology report that was produced for the Judge Advocate General in May of 1945 by a military medical lab in New York City. It describes three pieces of tattooed human skin recovered at Buchenwald. One of the pieces is described as containing two nipples and an umbilicus. That's the scientific name for the belly button. A microscopic examination showed it to be consistent with human skin. However, none of the specimens were part of any lampshade or other decorative object, just three separate pieces of what the forensic report calls, quote, tattooed skin hides. Ultimately, there just wasn't enough concrete evidence in the Buchenwald trial. There was not a single eyewitness account by any of the over 450 inmates that testified to show that Ilse Koch played any part in either choosing inmates for tattoo harvesting, skinning any victims herself, or even requesting that items be made out of human skin. After Clay commuted Koch's sentence, an irate public, including many veterans organizations, the Jewish World Congress, and ultimately a U.S. Senate subcommittee, pushed that Koch be retried in the German courts. This was particularly to avoid double jeopardy. That's the rule that a person can't be tried twice for the same offense. She would have to be prosecuted for what she'd done to German nationals rather than citizens of other countries. In addition, no one could produce any official documentation outlining the role of SS wives in concentration camps. Plus, since Koch wasn't technically on staff at Buchenwald, some questioned whether a military tribunal really had any authority over her in the first place. The general perception became, even among German citizens, that in some ways Koch had been more depraved than the SS guards, since they were acting on military orders while she was acting by choice. So Elsa Koch was rearrested in 1949 and charged by the prosecutor's office in Bavaria, West Germany. The Witch of Buchenwald's second trial, well, really her third, considering the first charges brought against her and her husband by the SS. This trial began in 1951 in Augsburg and lasted for 7 weeks. This time, four witnesses for the prosecution testified that Elsa Koch was observed personally involved in either choosing prisoners with tattoos or other actions related to the manufacture of human skin lampshades. But again, no lampshades or any other ornamental objects made from human skin could be produced. So that part of the charge against her was dropped. But in January of 1951, the Witch of Buchenwald was found guilty of incitement to murder, incitement of attempted murder, and incitement of bodily harm. She was again sentenced to life in prison. Now, I'm not trying to say Koch was innocent in any way, but she was certainly vilified in both the German and international media, despite clear lack of evidence in any of her trials of specific diabolical personal behavior on her part. For this reason, some scholars have said that in a way, Elsa Koch had become larger than life and really came to symbolize the depravity of the entire Nazi regime, perhaps second only to Hitler himself, and primarily because she was a woman, especially when you consider many of the cultural norms surrounding femininity during the mid-20th century. Elsa Koch had been a pretty young woman who rose from the sophisticated and enlightened German society but joined the Nazis and ultimately wound up at Buchenwald. That she, who at the time had been the mother of two small children, saw the horrors at Buchenwald firsthand, and not only did nothing to stop them, but became part of the madness, well, that seemed to epitomize how truly horrible and depraved things had gotten in Nazi Germany. What Elsa Koch was guilty of or not, we will never really know. But the fact remains that from the time she was picked up by the American military at her sister-in-law's home in the summer of 1945, after being recognized by a former prisoner of Buchenwald, she spent the rest of her life incarcerated, either by sentencing or awaiting one trial or another. Whether you believe she was as hideous as accounts say, or was a scapegoat or surrogate for the Nazi atrocities, she never walked free again. In 1967, Elsa Koch hanged herself in a German prison. Shortly before her suicide, Koch was visited by her son, Uwe, born when she was in prison. He had been taken from her at birth, but learned at age 19 that Koch was his mother. If she ever told her son his father's identity, it's never been made public. During her incarceration, Koch wrote, including to her children, of the utter cruelty that she had endured in 10 long years of difficult prison due to Jewish slander and perjury. In my opinion, even if she wasn't guilty of all the things she said to have done, even if the Buchenwald accounts of her were of mythic proportions, surely what she had seen happen to the Jews and others could in no way be compared to her incarceration. Now, in the few minutes we have left, I'd like to talk a little more about alleged Nazi objects made of human tissue. Some of the artifacts seen in the countless images and films from the Buchenwald liberation have been housed for many years at the National Museum of Health and Medicine in Silver Spring, Maryland. That's an interesting facility with a history that dates back to the Civil War, when it first served as the Army Medical Museum. It was also affiliated with the former Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, a group I taught with several times at annual forensic anthropology courses. I visited the museum, too, and have a couple of forensic anthropology colleagues who work there. Among the museum's collections from World War II are 5 pieces of tattooed leathery skin from Buchenwald. There's also a 6th one housed at the National Archives in D.C., likewise confiscated from Buchenwald. Reports indicate that as of 2004, 3 had been positively identified as human. A couple of the pieces have small round cutouts on their left side that appear to be from a hole punch, so perhaps they were kept in a binder at one time. The one from the National Archives is larger and has pinholes around its edges. In photos from Elsa Koch's 1947 military trial at Dachau, what look like these same 3 pieces are tacked up as courtroom exhibits. Perhaps that's where the pinholes originated. At one time, the piece at the National Archives had a label calling it part of a, quote, human skin lampshade. But the shade on the table in the Buchenwald liberation images doesn't show any tattooed design of any kind. It's just a solid colored beige lampshade. One of my forensic anthropology colleagues at Michigan State University, Dr. Norm Sauer, was called on not too long ago by the Holocaust Memorial Center in Michigan to try to authenticate some alleged Nazi souvenirs. Among these were 2 chess sets made of bone, a bar of soap said to be made with human fat, some bone fragments and ashes, and a lampshade, fairly similar to the one in the Buchenwald photos. Forensic analysis showed none of the items were of human origin, with the possible exception of some of the tiny bone fragments. In 2010, a swastika-embossed bar of soap for sale in a Montreal curiosity shop was also tested, but no human DNA was found. 6 months after Hurricane Katrina hit the U.S., a man found a lampshade at a garage sale. The seller said it was made from, quote, the skin of Jews. After paying $35, the man took the lampshade home, examined it, and was shocked that he could see pores and wrinkles in it. A year later, he sent the shade to a New York Magazine writer who paid $5,000 for forensic testing, which showed it was made of human skin. Labs in Germany and Israel confirmed the DNA testing, but nobody knows for sure where the shade originated or whether it's connected to the Nazis. The owner has tried to donate the lampshade to museums in both Israel and the United States, but all of them have turned him down. In November of 2013, the auction website eBay apologized for putting over 30 items alleged to have belonged to Holocaust victims on their site. They quickly removed the items from listing, saying eBay doesn't allow such postings, but somehow those slipped through their review process. Although the horrors of the Nazi atrocities should never be forgotten by the public, they also should not be publicly marketed.